Joining the cult. The day after Cray Ray's backstage rant was Thanksgiving. I started the morning with 20 minutes on the rowing machine. Very grown up. I played Go Fish with the children and picked up friends and relatives at the airport. Those were my Thanksgiving duties. I've been advertising the sous vide cooking appliance company Sans Air on my podcast, and Easy cooked up the turkey with our own Sans Air unit. Easy, Moxie, Z, my mother-in-law, and a few invited friends all had a great supper. My buddy Matt Donnelly described the sous vide turkey as turkey-infused turkey. I didn't eat myself sick, but I did eat a bit of everything. And I was pretty full. It was a great meal. But everything Cray Ray had said was still echoing through my head. I wrote and asked him about the diet. Could you get me down to 270 or 260? Sure. You know, the doctor said that about 230 all my meds go away. Let's do that then. How hard is this? Easy. Want to go to 220? Lower? I told him my doc was pushing for a stomach sleeve. Cray Ray wasn't that crazy. He didn't want me to even consider that. Just lose the weight and make your diet healthy. You'd think with me actively interested in his diet shit obsession, Cray Ray would be even more full-bore eager to push it. But that wasn't the case. He was always full tilt, whether people cared or not. And the amount of interest he got back didn't change his style at all. That's one of the many things I love about him. The stuff he was saying was batshit crazy. It was all stuff I'd always felt was true, but all the grown-ups told me wasn't true. He said there wouldn't be frequent meals to keep the metabolism going, that you didn't lose weight by eating more. He said I wouldn't exercise while I was losing weight. I'd get to my target weight and then exercise. He said I could lose more weight sitting on the couch and not eating. It was crazy stuff. But nothing he said seemed crazier than getting fucking surgery to not be fat. I was getting sucked into Cray Ray's world. I could feel it. I would never have considered it without my doctor's note, but I had that. So I just let myself be sucked into the cult. He would be my Charlie. I would be his Squeaky. But first, I wanted to check in with Tim Jennison. Anyone who's seen Tim's Vermeer knows Tim is crazier than a shithouse rat. After his youngest daughter left for college, the empty nest got to him. So he learned Dutch, reinvented a machine the 17th century Dutch master painter Johannes Vermeer might have used to paint, built an exact copy of Vermeer's studio, and spent years painting his own masterpiece with that machine. Tim is a nut. I knew Cray Ray had been there, helping Tim build the Vermeer room. Tim is wicked smart, and Tim loves science. Cray Ray is right there with him. Tim really cares about truth. Cray Ray is right there with him. Tim likes to see things proven wrong, especially things he himself believes. Tim is a good man. Fucking crazy. So I called Tim and asked him about Ray. Tim said he didn't really know anything about what Ray was up to now. He knew that at one time Ray had worked for government NASA. Tim is a real libertarian, but he liked Ray anyway. I told him I might turn control of my diet over to Cray Ray. Tim said, he's a good scientist. That's a little like John Coltrane saying he's a good musician. What more could I want? Since then, I've learned a lot more about Cray Ray's background. He's not a doctor, not an MD or a PhD. He's a Southern boy, calls himself a redneck. He lives in Alabama, but Huntsville, Alabama, as in NASA, Alabama. When Tim Jennison first introduced me to Ray, Ray was working at NASA and trying to get zero-G off the ground. I guess Ray had been shortlisted to be an astronaut. Tim said Ray also had other weird government stuff in his past, stuff he doesn't talk about. Saturday Night Live's Dana Carvey's brother, Brad, also had some sort of background like that. Brad is the person Dana's character Garth in the movie Wayne's World was based on. He also has government time he doesn't talk about. I don't even know what that means. Neither Brad nor Ray talks about their government time, and I don't ask. Cray Ray and Brad might have been meter maids for all I know. As a libertarian, I'm not thrilled with the idea that NASA exists. I think all space exploration should be private. But if you have to work for a government agency, it might as well be NASA. And Cray Ray had worked for NASA. He left NASA and got into the swimming pool business. Is that what a government guy would do? I don't know. Is that part of the revolving door for lobbyists? I don't know. There's something not quite right about Cray Ray. He's my kind of guy. When he got me weightless on his private vomit comet, it was a little shady. Shady like a beat-up Mexican cargo plane with me and Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top on the manifest as advisors or something. There seemed to be much too little paperwork for a plane that was going to fly vertically straight down toward the ocean while we floated around. But Billy and I were on board with Cray-Ray. Billy played his guitar, and I stripped naked and threw up on Cray-Ray. Rock and roll! I had trusted Cray-Ray with my life in the Vomit Comet, and Tim said he did good science, and that was good enough for me. I asked Cray-Ray what he'd do. He said he had a program that he'd take me through. He mentioned 2 weeks of potatoes, but I didn't figure that was for me. He said I'd lose a lot of weight and agree with my doc that I'd probably be able to get off my blood pressure meds. I said it wasn't all weight. Some of it was genetic. He said that was bullshit. I would get off my meds. He said I would feel amazing. He asked for 90 days, 12 weeks. Those are two different things. 12 weeks is 84 days. What Cray-Ray wanted was a season. Cray-Ray cares a lot about seasons. He says everyone seems to be able to stand any diet for one full season. 3 months, 12 weeks, 90 days. All different amounts of time, by the way. I had always dreaded diets, but there's one part of them that was really exciting. The test part. The performance art. If you want to know everything you need to know about Penn & Teller, it all comes down to masturbation. Neither one of us was ever told about masturbation when we were children, not by parents, friends, or school. So we each thought we had discovered it. That tells you most of what you need to know about us. Teller and I like to feel that we've invented something. Teller will hold a card in the palm position in his hand and think it's a new magic move because he turns his body a little bit to one side. He solves how to sit in his car. I get ideas and write them down and spew them forth and think they're brand new. I feel that way only because of ignorance. Someone has always covered everything I've thought before, but I don't like to think about that. Part of that is just being American. Real American exceptionalism is simply thinking we're exceptional. Teller and I did a show called Penn and Teller's Magic and Mystery Tour. Man, I hate that title. I didn't invent it. We went to Egypt, China, and India. We talked to magicians around the world. I guess I'm supposed to write that it amazed me how much we all had in common. What really struck me was the big difference in the way in which we bragged. All of them, especially the Chinese magicians, bragged by not taking credit for anything. They would show us brilliant moves. When we complimented them, they would say they had learned it from their master, and that he, in turn, had learned them from his master, that they were ancient Chinese magic traditions. It was clear they would have claimed that even if they were showing us a trick that involved an iPad. Part of what made them proud of their work was claiming they were simply continuing an ancient tradition. They did not seem to take any pride in anything personal they created, whereas American magicians, or at least Penn and Teller, will take individual credit for anything we can get away with. If I get away with the claim that I had invented playing cards, I would do that. Oh yeah, I think Teller inspired me on the diamonds, but I just thought of hearts, clubs, and spades myself. They just kind of popped into my head. Teller and I both thought we had invented masturbation. That's the similarity. We both have inflated ideas of our creativity. That's the similarity between us. I don't know how many other people think they invented masturbation. We are both so sure of our creativity that in each of our hearts, we believe we invented even vital bodily functions. Our differences are also shown in our discovery of masturbation. When Teller had his first orgasm, he thought he had injured himself internally. That's all you need to know about him. We know you know how Teller discovered masturbation. I just told you. But how do I know? Think of your coworkers. Do you know how each of them discovered masturbation? I know about Teller because back when we were carny trash, we still are, I guess, but I mean back when we performed in an actual tent and not in a hotel casino, we drove around together all day, every day, ate every meal together, and shared a room at Motel 6 every night. We spent years talking to each other. Some of that talk was pretentious, highfalutin bullshit that Teller and I believed then and still believe now with all our hearts. Some was magic and comedy theory. Some was arguing about minutia. Teller and I can put too fine a point on anything. But some of that talk was just killing time, so we talked about how we discovered jacking off. Teller thought he'd injured himself and was going to die from loss of precious bodily fluids. I, on the other hand, thought it was an endurance test. I was in the bathtub rubbing my penis. It was hard in both senses, and rubbing it felt really intense. I'd done it a few times before, but I wondered this time if I could really push myself, if I could go for the world record for penis rubbing. At that time, I didn't know I had any competition. I was inventing it and was the best at it. From the second time on, right up until now, it was pure pleasure. But that first time was just to see if I could do it, if I could do it just a little longer than before. I love a challenge. Losing weight as a grown-up is supposed to be no challenge at all. People do everything they can to make it easy, and that takes all the fun out of it. Then they just fail. There's no fun for me in making something easy. I learned to juggle the way I learned to masturbate. No, not by dropping my balls on the cellar floor, but by seeing how far I could push myself. And I didn't want to learn a three-ball cascade just well enough to impress people at a party. I wanted to be able to juggle three balls for 3 hours without missing once. If I dropped a ball after 2 hours and 45 minutes, I'd start again. When I learned to ride a unicycle, I wanted to ride it 30 miles uphill to the giant hippie Brotherhood of the Spirit commune, renamed the Renaissance Community in 1974, near my hometown to hear their band Spirit and Flesh play. I'd ride it to school in the middle of the winter after a big snowfall. When I learned a juggling trick right-handed, I then wanted to learn it again left-handed, even though no audience would ever care. This is the juggler state of mind. Magicians are the opposite. Magicians are always trying to get away with shit. Can I do this and fool people into thinking I'm doing that? That's all magic is. Magicians always want to brag that they invented an easier way. You know, you don't need to do that fancy move. You can just mark the cards. You could just use a stooge for that. Making it easy, just getting by, is a matter of pride to a magician. Here's magic low-fat fat. If you use it, you can eat the same way and still lose weight. Or magic fake sugar. With it, you can drink soda all day and still lose weight. Never mind that it doesn't work, and worse, that it's not fun. It's magical thinking in both senses. Magical thinking in that it doesn't work, and in thinking like a magician to make it easy. Take something impossible and do it the easy way. Cheat and fail anyway. That's not thinking like a juggler discovering masturbation in the bathtub. That's a magician discovering masturbation and thinking he needs to go to the ER. Teller is a magician. He wants to make things easy. I'm a juggler. I want to make things hard, and not just my dick. Difficulty is pride to a juggler. Pride and difficulty made me discover masturbation and helped me lose 100 pounds. Let's talk about children. There's a thing called the Stanford Marshmallow Experiment. In the 60s and 70s, a professor named Walter Mischel conducted experiments in delayed gratification with young children. He put them in a room with a treat, like a marshmallow, and told them that if they didn't eat the treat for 15 minutes, they would get more treats. But if they ate that one, that was it. They wouldn't get any more. Follow-up studies showed that the children who could delay gratification did better for the rest of their lives than those who wolfed down the treat. Okay, but I can't help thinking that the ones who just said fuck it and ate the marshmallow right away grew up sexiest. There are many techniques that those able to delay used. Some hid the marshmallows from themselves. Some looked out the window. Some got lost in play to pass the time and take away the temptation. Those techniques worked, but they're the easy way. There's a little magical thinking going on there. The test subjects who grabbed my imagination were the ones who just sat there, staring at the tempting, forbidden treat for 15 minutes. Just stared at it, smelled it, thought about it. How groovy and intense is that? Those are the subjects I want to watch through life. I never got to take the test, but that's how I'd like to see myself acting. Put that fucker on my nose and make me balance it there for 15 minutes. Make me put my mouth around it, but keep my mouth open. And go longer than 15 minutes. Please let me prove it all night. That would bring me the most joy. I may be known as a Las Vegas magician, but I'm really a puritanical Massachusetts juggler. Cray Ray tapped my inner masturbating juggler. He knew that Kennedy said we chose to go to the moon not because it was easy, but because it was hard, and recognized that I would lose 100 pounds because it was difficult. I wanted to feel like I was doing something. I wouldn't hide food or look out the window. I would stare at the marshmallow for 90 days, or 12 weeks, or 3 months, and at the end of whatever the fuck amount of time it took, I would get my treat. And my treat would be not fucking dying with a stomach sleeve. Delayed gratification done like a juggler. Before Cray Ray got his claws into my psyche, part of my sensible grown-up weight loss plan was taking hour-long trike rides most days with Michael Godeau. While I was fooling myself that portion control would work and that fatty fish was a weight loss food, I also thought that exercise would help me lose weight, so I was riding the trike. In a later chapter, we'll cover the idiocy of trying to outrun your mouth, the idea that exercise can negate eating. That's just insane. But I was exercising like a grown-up with my buddy Godot. Yeah, motherfucker. I put grown-up and tricycle in the same image. We ride trikes. They're low to the ground with two wheels up front and one in the back. When you're riding them, you feel so spiffy. You fly along so fast, so low, like race car driving or war singing low rider. You're not up high on what trike riders call a launcher, a traditional bike with a racing seat that cuts off all circulation to your cock and balls. You're flying along in an easy chair. When you take a rest, you can stay right in your seat. You can ride a trike without making your cock go numb. You can ride right up and have sex without having to dance around to get the blood back in there. When you're riding a trike, you feel so cool, but everyone else thinks you look like an asshole. Riding a trike is like being Don Johnson, feeling cool while everyone knows you're a dipshit. I kind of enjoy that. I did the opening show of the second season of Miami Vice, and I sure didn't like a moment of being around Don Johnson. But it seemed like it might be okay to be Don Johnson. Yeah, I thought he was a dipshit, but he seemed to think he was pretty cool. Better than the other way around, right? So Godot and I are riding around the bike path near his house on our trikes, and we're feeling like Don Johnson. We're feeling like a pair of wicked fat Don Johnsons. I'm about 3 weeks out of the hospital at this point, and I'm dropping weight in a grown-up way. I'm still on track to have a stomach sleeve, but I'm making some progress. Godot is friends with Cray Ray, too, and they've been talking about some of his crazy cold and diet stuff. I told Godot that I had gotten in touch with Ray and was maybe going to try his crazy thing. Godot said he was on board. Godot wanted to do it with me. I was surprised he came on board. Godot likes to cook and really likes to eat. Godot is a coon ass from Louisiana, and he likes his salt and fat, but he was also sick of being sick and fat. When I told Cray Ray that Godot and I wanted to do it together, he was against it. He didn't want me to talk to anyone about what I'd be doing, not even while I was doing it. He said if Godot and I were doing it together, we would talk to each other and find ways to undermine it. He said it was like Fight Club, so we couldn't talk about it. He didn't want us talking to anyone. The first rule of Cray Ray is don't talk about Cray Ray. I talk about everything I do. If you've read my books, and if you're reading this one, you know that. I talk about tele-discovering masturbation. I talk about herpes. I don't care. I like to share ideas. And now Cray Ray was telling me his rules, that I couldn't talk to anyone about this. That's the moment I knew I'd be joining a cult. One of the first things a cult does is cut you off from your family and friends and make you submit to a charismatic leader who you need to believe has all the answers, even if it goes against the beliefs of everyone else you know. Cray Ray was going to cut me off from everyone, put me under a great deal of stress, and contradict everything I knew to be true. He was going to limit my ability to judge everything he was telling me. He was going to make me feel alone and go to only him for friendship and guidance. He was going to take control of my life. I told him he was doing cult shit, and he said, yes. How the fuck do you argue with that? My doctor had told me that I was going to get a stomach sleeve. They were going to cut into my body and change my digestion forever. How much worse is joining a cult? Couldn't be that much worse. Okay. So I signed up. Godot and I told Cray Ray that we'd join his cult and do everything he said, and we wouldn't question it even between the two of us, and then we wouldn't talk to anyone else. We kind of hoped he wouldn't tell us the Beatles wanted us to kill the president, but we were in his hands. When he talked backstage about 2 weeks of eating nothing but potatoes, I figured that was some nutty experiment he'd done on himself or on college students or something. I didn't think I'd be eating nothing but potatoes. But as the brilliant magician Matt King once said about me, you exaggerate way more than anyone else in the world. I figured that other people exaggerate too. So just potatoes didn't mean just potatoes. It meant something else. I didn't know what it did mean, but it sure didn't mean we were going to eat nothing but potatoes for 2 weeks. Helter Skelter!